David Akers' brand identity model is taught in every business school on the planet. It works. But ask it one question. How much should I invest in each part of my brand identity for which audience? And it goes quiet. That's the gap this research fills.
Yeah, exactly. It's a huge shift.
Three things today. First, how the most taught brand framework maps onto something more precise. Same insights, sharper tools. Second, the identity image gap that Aker named but never measured, and what happens when you can actually compute it. Third, what this means for consultants and brand teams working with AI tools that need numbers, not narratives.
It really is a structural change, you know, in how we manage these intangible assets.
Right. And for you listening, I want you to think of this deep dive as, well, your ultimate shortcut.
Definitely.
If you want to understand how the qualitative art of brand strategy is transforming into this precise, measurable science, without losing its soul in the process, this is the conversation.
Because to build that bridge, we have to start with the foundation.
Right.
We need to look at what David Akers built back in 1996 with his brand identity model. I mean, it's endured for 30 years because it successfully captures the multidimensional nature of a brand in a way that practitioners can actually use.
Yeah, it's totally intuitive.
Exactly. And he broke brand identity down into four distinct perspectives. Brand as product, brand as organization, brand as person, and brand as symbol.
Okay, but I have to push back a little here before we go any further.
Sure.
If Akers' model is as foundational and successful as you say, why are we messing with it? Like, by turning a brand's identity into a math equation, aren't we kind of stripping away the creative magic of branding? Are we just throwing out the old textbooks?
No, not at all. And it is vital to understand that spectral brand theory, or SBT, absolutely does not replace Akers. It formalizes it.
Okay, formalizes.
Right. Think of the relationship like Daniel Kahneman's behavioral economics compared to Adam Smith's classical economics.
Oh, interesting.
Kahneman didn't invalidate Adam Smith. Right. He didn't claim that markets don't exist. Instead, he just provided a framework to measure how people actually behave rather than how a perfectly rational agent should behave.
Right. The messy human reality of it.
Exactly. And SBT does the exact same thing for Akers' model. It preserves the structural insights but adds parametric precision. Akers gave brand strategy its vocabulary. SBT gives it a coordinate system.
Coordinate system. Okay, I like that. Let's look at how that coordinate system actually works in practice, because I want to paint a mental picture for you listening.
Yeah, visual aids help a lot here.
Right. So imagine a mapping diagram. On the left, you have Akers' four identity perspectives, product, organization, person, symbol, and each is sitting in its own container.
Right.
Then on the right, you have the eight dimensions of spectral brand theory arranged on a radar chart. Arrows connect each of Akers' containers to the specific dimensions it bundles.
That visual is perfect because it shows exactly what we mean by formalizing. Akers' four containers each bundle multiple independent perceptual channels into a single bucket.
Right, they're grouped together.
Yeah, and SBT unbundles them into distinct, measurable dimensions.
So let's zoom in on one of those containers to show how that unbundling actually works. Take brand as organization.
Yeah.
In Akers' world, that's just one solid box.
Yes.
What does that map to on the SBT side?
So Akers' brand as organization actually connects to three separate SBT dimensions on that right side radar chart.
Okay, which ones?
First, there's the ideological dimension, which covers the company's values and ethical commitments.
Got it.
Second is the cultural dimension, which involves their aesthetic codes and like their alignment with the current zeitgeist.
Right.
And third is the temporal dimension, which is their heritage, longevity, and origin story.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So Akers bundled values, aesthetics, and heritage all into one concept. I can see how strategically that creates a bit of a diagnostic blur. Like if you are a traditional brand strategist looking at a drop in your metrics,
yeah,
you might just ask, is our organizational identity still compelling?
And that is a very broad directional question.
Right. Very vague.
The SBT strategist counters with a highly actionable, measurable question. They ask, is it the values, the cultural codes, or the heritage that is underperforming, and for which observer cohort?
That feels like the difference between taking a broad spectrum antibiotic and using targeted laser therapy.
That's a great way to put it.
If you just know your organization score is down, you might launch this massive, expensive sustainability campaign. which is an ideological fix, right?
Exactly.
And the actual problem is that your cultural codes just feel completely dated to your newest buyers.
Yeah, you end up medicating the wrong disease because your diagnostic tool just isn't high resolution enough. By unbundling into 8 dimensions, SBT lets you isolate the exact frequency that is dropping.
But wait, this raises a major question about how we actually figure this out. In Aker's model, a huge part of the exercise is the executive team sitting in a boardroom, putting sticky notes on a whiteboard, and deciding what the core identity is versus the extended identity.
Right, the classic workshop approach.
Yeah. So if everything is unbundled into 8 dimensions, how do we actually get the numbers to put into this coordinate system? How do we discover the core? Are we sending out surveys or something?
Well, this is where the mathematical formalization really does the heavy lifting. We live in an era of massive digital footprints, right?
Right, data everywhere.
So we can analyze sentiment across millions of customer views. We can measure interaction rates with specific types of ad copy, say, testing an economic message versus a heritage message.
Oh, I see.
And we can use natural language processing to map those behaviors directly to the 8 dimensions. In Aker's framework, identifying the core identity is a subjective debate.
Right.
But in SBT, core versus extended identity is not something you decide. It is something you discover by measuring which dimensions actually drive conviction in your cohorts.
Meaning, you don't just declare we are a heritage brand just because the founder wants it to be true.
Exactly. You measure the data.
And if the data shows that your target buyers have a near zero weight on the temporal dimension, but they heavily base their purchases on the experiential dimension, then heritage simply isn't your core identity.
The core dimensions reveal themselves empirically. They are the dimensions with the highest spectral weights for your primary observer cohorts. It takes the guesswork out of the boardroom entirely.
Which brings us to a really fascinating tension. If we can now measure these specific dimensions based on data, what happens when what the brand intends to project deeply clashes with what the observer actually perceives?
Yeah.
Because Aker talked about this as the identity image gap, right?
He did, and he acknowledged that there is almost always a gap between the identity a brand designs and the perception cloud the consumer actually forms. But again, it remained a qualitative concern for Aker.
Just a sort of general problem to be aware of.
Right. But SBT makes it computable. Right. We can calculate the exact mathematical L2 distance between the brand's designed spectral profile, which is where they are actually investing their budget across the 8 dimensions, and the observer's perceived spectral profile.
Well, hold on. L2 distance.
Yeah.
For those of us who haven't taken a geometry class in a decade, what does that actually mean in plain English? Is that just like the straight line distance between 2 points on a graph?
Yes. L2 distance is essentially Euclidean distance.
Okay.
If you imagine the brand's intended identity as 1 point floating in an 8-dimensional space, and the consumer's actual perception as another point in that same space, the L2 distance is the literal shortest straight line between them.
Wow.
It is a strict quantification of how far off your marketing is from reality.
So if we have that straight line measurement, how do we tighten it up? Like, how do we get this gap to zero?
You don't, and you can't.
Wait, really?
Yeah. The identity image gap is not a communication failure. It is a geometry property. You cannot eliminate it. You can only measure it and manage it.
That actually shifts how I look at every ad campaign I've ever seen.
Right.
It's not about perfect communication. It's about managed distortion. Mm-hmm. So why is it impossible to close the gap completely?
Because of what the research calls the rendering problem. Think of it like a highly complex video game being played on 1,000 different monitors, all with different color calibrations, refresh rates, and resolutions.
Okay, I follow that.
The brand emits the exact same underlying code, the same signals. But every single observer cohort is watching on a different monitor.
Right, they all have their own filters.
Exactly. They have different spectral sensitivities, different prior beliefs, different cultural tolerances. When your identical signal hits their unique perceptual filter, it physically renders differently.
It just can't be identical.
No, it cannot form the exact same perception cloud in every mind. Structural distortion is built into the physics of human perception.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting for me. If that gap is a permanent feature of geometry, how does a brand maintain its identity? Aker just said, be consistent. What does SBT say?
Well, Aker's advice to be consistent was right for its time, but it treated consistency as a single dial you just turn from low to high.
Right.
SBT looks at the structure and says there are actually 5 distinct coherence types.
Coherence types, okay.
Right, not just degrees of consistency, but completely different architectural models of survival. This actually builds on organizational research from 2002 by Sorensen.
Oh, I think I remember seeing that in the notes.
Yeah, Sorensen proved that the type of cultural consistency a firm has predicts its resilience to crises far better than the degree of that consistency.
So a traditional audit might look at two brands, see that their messaging matches their packaging, and give them both a consistency score of, say, 7 out of 10. They look identical on paper.
What's fascinating here is they will react completely differently to a competitive attack or cultural shift. Let's walk through them.
Yeah, let's do it.
The first coherence type is ecosystem coherence.
Okay, wait, my notes say signal coherence first, but we can do ecosystem.
Let's stick to the order. Let's start with signal coherence. Think of a brand like IKEA. Everyone, everywhere perceives the exact same highly controlled, standardized signals.
Right, the blue and yellow box, the meatballs, the flat pack furniture.
Exactly. But a disruption like a supply chain scandal hits everyone equally because the perception cloud is uniform. The damage transmits uniformly.
Uniformity is their defense, but also their vulnerability. If the signal breaks, the whole brand takes a hit.
Exactly.
So what is the second type?
The second is ecosystem coherence. Hermes is a classic example here. Different observer cohorts perceive totally different things from the brand, but those perceptions reinforce each other.
Oh, that makes sense. The Hermes investor buyer deeply values scarcity. The heritage buyer cares about the generational craftsmanship, and the aspirational buyer cares about the semiotic status.
Exactly.
They literally do not see the same brand, but their distinct perception clouds support the overall luxury ecosystem. So if a crisis hits, it might shake off a few peripheral buyers, but the core ecosystem absorbs the shock and protects the center.
Precisely. The single consistency score hid the architecture. Now, the third type is identity coherence, and this one functions as a binary filter.
Okay, how so?
The sources use Patagonia as the mechanical example here. And just to be clear to you listening, we are absolutely not endorsing any political viewpoints left or right. We are purely looking at the structural mechanics of how this specific brand operates.
Completely understood. So mechanically speaking, how does a brand like that use identity coherence?
It means the brand has a non-negotiable ideological core. It creates deep, unbreakable brand conviction for observer cohorts who align with those values.
Right.
And it actively, intentionally repels observer cohorts who don't. It is designed to divide. If a crisis hits that challenges their ideology, the aligned cohort rallies even harder to defend the brand, while the misaligned cohort simply walks away.
Wow. That is a completely different survival mechanic than IKEA's signal coherence or Hermes's ecosystem coherence, even if they all look the same on an old school audit.
Exactly.
What about the fourth type?
The fourth is experiential asymmetry. This happens when a brand manages to create a beautiful, compelling spectral profile in its marketing, say, scoring high on semiotic and cultural dimensions.
Right, the ads look amazing.
Right, but the actual lived experience of using the product fails drastically.
Oh, I can think of a few of these, like a luxury airline that has stunning heritage-rich commercials, but when you actually fly with them, the service is terrible and they lose your luggage.
Yes.
The perception cloud has a massive gaping hole in the experiential dimension.
Exactly. The asymmetry between the projected signal and the rendered reality creates a highly fragile state. The brand conviction might exist prior to purchase, but it collapses upon usage.
Makes total sense.
And finally, the fifth type is the incoherent state.
I imagine this is a brand that has no structural integrity at all.
Yeah.
Like a 150-year-old heritage watchmaker suddenly trying to release a smart ring targeted at crypto day traders while also sponsoring a TikTok dance house.
That is a perfect analogy. An incoherent brand constantly shifts its spectral weights to chase trends. It sends out conflicting signals that fail to form a stable perception cloud for any observer cohort.
It just kind of falls apart.
The brand essentially dissipates. Mm-hmm. If we connect all this to the bigger picture, it forces brand managers to stop asking a generic question like, how consistent are we? And start asking, what type of coherence do we have and where are its structural vulnerabilities?
And this highlights a massive shift in how we think about the audience itself. Aker always seemed to assume there was one brand identity speaking to a unified audience. He'd talk about the customer as this singular, monolithic entity.
And that was Aker's blind spot. SCP formally introduces the concept of observer spectral profiles. We touched on this with the rendering problem, but it is vital to internalize.
Right.
Identical brand signals will produce structurally different perception clouds for different observer cohorts.
And we aren't just theorizing here either. The sources point to empirical proof from Greer and Brumbaugh back in 1999.
Yes, they proved through rigorous study that different cultural groups assemble completely different meanings from the exact same advertising signals.
Which is wild.
It is, but the framework mathematically reflects the reality of human perception. An observer's priors, their past experiences, their cultural context, their economic reality literally change the weight they assign to the signals you send.
Let me put that into a practical scenario to make sure I'm getting this.
Go for it.
If I'm a deeply pragmatic, budget-conscious shopper, my spectral profile weights the economic dimension hugely.
Right.
If you show me a beautifully shot cinematic commercial about a company's 100-year history hitting the semiotic and temporal dimensions, my brain basically filters it out as noise. My perception cloud barely registers it because it doesn't answer my core need.
Exactly.
But my neighbor, who highly weights heritage and aesthetics, sees that exact same commercial and their brand conviction skyrockets. Same signal. Totally different brand realities.
And that is why treating the audience as a single entity is a profound structural flaw. You end up averaging out the differences across your buyers.
Ah, I see.
When you do that, you are designing a brand for an average observer who mathematically does not exist in the real world.
Let me synthesize this journey for you, because we have covered incredible ground today.
We really have.
We didn't throw Acre away.
Yeah.
We took his four foundational perspectives and unbundled them into eight precise dimensions. We explored how to use data to measure the identity image gap using L2 distance, recognizing that managing this gap requires knowing your specific coherence type, not just a generic consistency score.
Right.
And we realized that absolutely all of this depends entirely on the observer cohort looking at the brand. It is a completely observer-dependent reality.
Which raises an important question about why this formalization is happening right now. Why didn't the industry adopt this 20 years ago?
Right, why not?
The answer is artificial intelligence. As AI tools increasingly handle brand analysis, portfolio scanning, and competitive tracking, they require precise dimensional numbers.
They need the math.
Yes, they cannot operate on Acre's narrative descriptions. You cannot feed a large language model a vague qualitative sense of brand as person and expect reproducible strategic analysis.
But you can feed it a 48-parameter YAML specification based on spectral profiles. Just to decode that for a second, YAML is basically a structured text format, right?
Mm.
A way to organize data so a machine can parse it without needing to understand poetry or human nuance.
Right, correct. It stands for YAML Ain't Markup Language, and it is highly readable for both humans and machines. SBT translates the intuitive art of brand strategy into that kind of structured data.
It's the bridge.
Exactly. It gives the AI the mathematical coordinate system it needs to run thousands of simulations, predict market collapse scenarios, and audit coherence types instantly.
If you want to go deeper on the mathematical foundations, Lecture 6 will cover this in academic depth. That comes later. For now, Episode 5 is the academic positioning overview, and it connects directly to the research lineage that produced this formalization.
Perfect.
And it is important to remember the rigor behind this shift. This isn't just some fleeting agency framework. It is backed by 20 research papers on Zenodo. It is heavily documented, mathematically bounded, and ready for empirical testing.
Which leaves us with a rather profound implication for the future of commerce.
Oh.
Yeah. We have established today that a brand's reality is entirely dependent on the specific observer cohort assembling its perception cloud.
Right. The human reality.
Well, exactly. For the last century, that observer has been a human being with cultural priors, emotional baggage, and irrational preferences.
Okay.
But if we are formalizing brand identity into machine-readable data structures, it begs a crucial question. What happens to your brand when the primary observer making the purchasing decisions is no longer a human being, but an autonomous AI agent scraping the web to restock a household's inventory? It's an algorithm is the one forming the perception cloud. Which dimensions does it weight?